Well, we have not one, but two legends in the studio today, if I might say so. It's a welcome back to Geoffrey Holland, who was here this time last year. How are
you,
Geoffrey?
Hi to everybody.
Did you know what? The first time I saw you in the street, and I thought, I know that face, but I can't place it. You didn't have any makeup on.
That's right. I was dressed as a man.
That's unusual for you.
It is right.
And alongside Geoffrey, we have John Challis. John, how are you?
I'm very well, indeed. Thank you. Now, considering the time of day.
Actually. Well, I know.
It's a bit early for you, really.
Are not normally to be seen at this time of day. Well, actually, I know that to be not true, because you're both staying near to the radio station, and I've seen you at some fairly early hours going off to rehearsals before the start of Jack and the Beanstalk.
Well, they used to make us start at 10 o'clock, didn't they?
I know, it's an ungodly
hour
in the morning.
Evil people. Horrible.
Now, we're going to talk about Jack and the Beanstalk, but first things first, I know that a lot of people are going to want to come and say hello to you, John, because you're going to be in Waterstones this Saturday.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's 10 till... 10 till, what is it?
11 till 12:30.
Sorry, 11 to 12. Yeah. I'm obviously going to get there early. yes, because I've written my autobiography in two parts and also a couple of novels in the last sort of 4 years, I suppose. And the novels are sort of semi-autobiographical too, about my adventures in Herefordshire. Moved out of London 16 years ago. And yes, they're on sale at Waterstones at the moment, and I shall be sitting there on Saturday morning, signing copies and dedicating them for anybody who's interested.
I mean, I have read your autobiographies. I didn't realise about the other novels as well, so they're next on my list of things to read. But I'm sure a lot of people will want to get a signed copy. Where do you find the time to write? Because you seem to be pretty busy as an actor.
Well, yes, I'm sort of busy sporadically, I suppose, like most actors. You know, you have sort of gaps in between. And I've always jotted things down. I mean, from way back, sort of, I don't know, characters I've met and situations I've found myself in. And I've actually written a couple of plays, one of which did quite well. But it was really, really my adventures. You know, it's not a play as such. It's sort of like I am a camera. It's just like I want to tell you a story. You know, that sort of thing. And so I've always sort of chaotically written stuff down, and people have always said to me, you should write your story, it sounds very interesting and so on, but I've never got it together. But I met someone when I moved down to Herefordshire who's an editor, and he's very good at sort of getting stuff together, finding a narrative, finding it through, chucking out the rubbish, tidying it up, correcting the spelling, doing all that sort of thing. And it was really meeting him that got it all together, because I've got bits of paper all over the place.
And just
completely disorganised, really. So I have a bit of help in that area.
Right. Yeah. Now, Geoffrey, of course, you keep quite busy in one or two different ways. And last year, when you were here, we talked a lot about your Stan Laurel.
Yes.
So is that still ongoing?
It is indeed. And in fact, since I saw you last, it's been a huge success, I'm happy to say. I took it to Edinburgh for the whole of the Fringe in August, and it sold out.
Really?
I was amazed, yeah. It sold out, and I had to put four extra performances in just due to demand. So bang went my day off.
Wow. Well, actually, funny enough, just before Christmas, I was editing last year's interviews for repeating, and I've got his name. Rick Wakeman.
Yes.
He was also at Edinburgh, and he said, what happens is you can sell a good number of tickets for your first show or two, but then it either flies or it dies.
Yeah.
And he said he saw some that, you know, at the end of the week, it was two men and a dog. So if you were selling did well.
I did well. I'm very proud to say. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm not. I was just gobsmacked, you know. Yeah. I was just absolutely astounded by the way it worked out.
What is it about Laurel and Hardy that's lasted so long?
It's just the fact that they were the pioneers of their comedy style, and the fact that it's clean, it's funny, it's inventive, you know, it's physical without too many words. The thing I had trouble with, because I put the hat on and do both voices at various points in the play, and quote from the films, you know, little routines that people would remember, and I was hard-pressed to find dialogue that had a verbal tag. Yeah. Because they're for such physical comics, you know. They'd have a conversation and then they'd get cross and Ollie would end up in a pool of water or something, you know, and that would be the tag.
Yeah.
So I was really hard-pressed to find out how to actually write a couple, make a couple up, you know, in their style to actually fill the spaces in the piece.
Now, of course, we know you both as comedy actors, if you like. But did either of you start out to be a comedy actor or just to be an actor?
Well, John, after you.
Oh, well, I just, the first thing I ever saw as a kid was Peter Pan. I mean, the play, the musical play, as opposed to pantomime, which I've done several times since. And I just got...
One of the best Captain Hooks in the business, I'll have you know.
I say thank you very much indeed. Very kind.
And I was just completely transported by it, according to my mother. I never stopped talking about it. And I wanted to be Captain Hook. I mean, I wasn't particularly interested in the children and the flying and the romance of J.M. Barrie's wonderful words. You know, it was Captain Hook. I was riveted by this costume, his red costume and his sword and the fact that... I suppose the fact that he was so evil. And it sort of stuck with me. And that's what made me really want to do it. But I was put off it and I started... I had a full start as a state agency in Surrey.
Really?
But I couldn't concentrate and I got sacked, and quite right too. And I would have sacked me, you know? And I sort of almost ran away and joined a children's theatre, I suppose, a travelling children's theatre, and then graduated to rep and...
And ended up as Captain Hook?
Yes, ended up in Plymouth with Geoffrey Holland.
But isn't it interesting? I mean, you're not the first person I've spoken to who's talked about the... some form of a dream as a child, which has ended up being their life. There's got to be something in that stuff, I reckon, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, I can contradict that, because it never happened to me that way. No, I was 15 years old, and as tall as I am now, spotty, you know, huge glasses, because my eyes are terrible, and I was wearing bottle enders, you know, and spots, big teeth, no self-confidence or self-esteem whatsoever. And I was going to this church youth club with my friend Pete, and he came to... It was so boring. We wanted something else to do, and at 15 years old, you know, your hormones are just kicking in. And he said to me, "I've found this amateur dramatic group for teenagers, for under 21s. Would have come along with me next Friday." I said, "What do you mean amateur dramatics? What's that?" He said, "Well, they do plays, you know." I said, "What, you mean act?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I couldn't do that. That's stupid. I've never done anything like that in my life. I used to avoid the school play, like the play, you know." And he said to me that, "Well, some of the girls are very pretty." I said, "What time do you want me?" And that's how it happened. And I went to this drama group. I sat down to read a play. They were doing 1066 and all that, which all amateur groups do, because there's masses of parts for everybody in it. And I started reading this thing, and I heard laughter. And something went ping.
Yeah.
And I thought, I want some of this. Yeah. You know, I want some of this. And I did go out with a couple of the girls, and my self-confidence went whoosh straight up, you know. I found, out of the absolute blue, that I had a gift for acting. I could do it. I loved doing it, particularly for comedy. And then I went and trained when the time was right for me, and went to drama school, did 3 years, and then I went into rep. And this was 1968, when there were still a few reps about. And I did 3 weekly rep at Coventry for about 5 years at the Belgrade Theatre. And learnt my trade, literally, doing everything.
Now, you've both, of course, been in what was, at its time, the biggest TV comedy. Geoffrey, of course, Heidi High. And John...
We were on at the same time, weren't we, in the 80s?
It was an 80s thing, yeah.
So, I mean, John, does your life change when everybody recognises you? It must do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it was about the fourth series. That would be about 1985. Or something. You suddenly realise that people are stopping in the street and sort of shaking your hand. I just want to shake your hand, you know. Yeah. I really love the show. And I'm going, wow. And that's when you really sort of started to feel you were onto something. Because the Boycie character was quite a periphery character to begin with. Mm. And the first series, I only did one episode. I think I only did one episode in the second series too. And then two in the third or something. So it sort of increased. But I had no idea that it was going to go on any further than that, because nobody ever said anything. Nobody ever said, "Oh, we'll definitely be back in the next series." Nobody said anything at all. So it was always a complete surprise when he kept coming back. Yeah. You know? But as it increased, you just thought, my goodness, this really has legs. This, you know, because because people were so effusive about it.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I mean, and still today, I mean. You know, you will always be identified with Boycie, I guess, won't you?
Yes, people often ask me, is that a problem, you know? And I suppose in some terms it can be. But in other places, I mean, it opens such a lot of doors. You know,
yeah. And how is the used car lot going, is it?
I know absolutely nothing about used cars at all. I like driving them, you know, yeah, but, yeah. But I know nothing about them, really.
And Jeffrey, Heidi High, how long did that run for?
It ran for 9 series over 8 years, from 1980 to 87.
Wow.
And it was really, really, it was massive. I mean, at the time, John probably didn't tell you the same thing from Fools and Horses, but we, at its peak in the early 80s, we were pulling 19.5 million viewers for each performance.
I mean, nobody does
and there
that
were
anymore,
only
they,
three yeah. channels, yeah, then, yeah. admittedly, but, you know, that was a massive draw. And I think episode 3 of series 1 had gone out, and I was wearing my big bottle ender glasses in Watford shopping with my wife, and I suddenly heard somebody shout, "Heidi, hi!" And I thought, "Oh my God, I've been recognised! Oh God, oh yeah, what am I going to do?" I couldn't cope with this, you know. Yeah, I was just a jobbing actor until this happened, and then suddenly my face is known, and I didn't quite know how to deal with it. And I looked round. And it was a young lad across the street, and he wasn't calling to me at all. He was shouting "Heidi, hi" to his mate on the other side of the road. So, you know, it was taking off. The phrase, the title that had taken on, you know, the public mantle had embraced it.
And is it fair to say that if you sat down and tried to come up with a catchphrase or a line like that, that you couldn't do it? They almost seemed to happen by accident.
Yes, it was. That actually did happen. "Heidi High" was something that was used in the forces during the war. Some drunken colonel got the troops to shout "Heidi High" and shout "Hody ho" back, and he was court-martialed for it. Apparently, I don't know. It was some sort of out of order thing that went on.
Well, I hope he got some royalties.
The news, and of course, Butlins took it on.
It
is strange. It catches up with you, doesn't it? Because you suddenly realise that something you've invented or been part of, it's got into the national consciousness.
Yeah.
And you sort of—I mean, in my case, I sort of feel slightly responsible for it because I put this voice on, you know, and had a peculiar, pedantic way of talking, you know, including the wonderful Marlene, you know, and this is what started to happen. I used to get people going, "Marlene," and I look round and there's somebody going and then the laugh, of course, and I invented the laugh, and that's, of course, I still do it.
It's in the panto.
I'm still doing it every night here at Plymouth.
Can you trade?
I'll tell you what, it brings the house down and gets a big round of applause every single performance.
You can't trademark a laugh, but if you could, I mean, it's you and Sid James, really, and then that's
But it's a complete accident. I mean, no instruction. I just did it because I remembered, strangely, a woman in a pub that I knew in the 70s who had this machine gun like laugh.
Yeah.
And I just did it. And everybody laughed and said, keep that in.
Do it now. Go on.
Shall I?
Yeah, do it for them. It's too early. It's too early.
Yeah. Standing start. No good. You've got to be on the end of a line, is it?
Yeah. Which kind of brings us back to where we started. Jack and the Beanstalk, which runs until the 17th of January at the Theatre Royal. So is it going well? Are you enjoying it?
It's packing them in. It's massive. And it's a really lively show. It goes like a machine gun, doesn't it?
I enjoy watching it. I don't know about you. I sort of stand off stage waiting to come on. And,
I love it.
You see all the girls and boys dancing away and having a wonderful time. And it's got real energy to it.
Fantastic. Yeah, the choreography is amazing.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely superb, I think.
Well, if you haven't been yet, it runs until the 17th of January. The box office, as always, for the Theatre Royal, 267 treble 2. And as we said, you can meet John this Saturday at the Waterstones in Drake Circus. That's the
top one
where you'll be signing copies of your various books.
And may I say, if you just get onto my website, wigmorebooks.com, also there's a whole list of dates that I'm doing my one-man show, which is Only Fools and Boise, and I go around and I talk about, you know, my life and, of course, Boise and tell stories along the way and so on.
And
so
we can follow you on Twitter at Being Boise.
Oh, you can,
as well.
Yes, you can, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And as for you, Jeffrey, when can we see you doing your one-man show?
Well, there's a list of book dates on my website, which is jeffreyholland.co.uk, and there's a Mr. Laurel page on there, and you can click on it and find out where I'm going to be and when.
Do a bit of Stan Laurel for us. Go on.
I certainly will.
John and Jeffrey, thank you both very much indeed. Lovely to see you.
Great pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you.